Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. Critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
What is a glorious Saturday morning. Golfers have had this weekend circled on their calendar for what, the last 10 days? Whatever length forecast you choose to trust, this is the one. This is the one we all have been looking for. And I tell you what, this is like a new era of positivity for me. I tried this with Zolak and Bertrand starting on Thursday, just being like a positive guy. Being in a good mood is oftentimes just a decision you make, okay? And I'm going to decide to be to look at the bright side of most things, okay? I've done this before. I did this once with Troop. It lasted for like an hour and a half. But I've kept it going for like 3 days now. All right. So with regard to this weekend and what I thought was going to happen, I'm just looking on the bright side. It's going to be a beautiful weekend weather-wise. If you want to play golf, you'll be able to play golf. And to that end, by the way, coming up a little bit later in the show, the head professional from the Cape Club of Sharon, his name is Stephen Daly. He is going to be with us on the show. We're not going to mess around, right? We're not going to get into, grip pressure hand position on your chipping stroke. We're going to talk about driving the golf ball. Just hitting big, fat, juicy drives, right? That'll be our first lesson segment of the season here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. So if you're gonna get out to play today, listen to Stephen Daly from the Cape Club of Sharon. He'll be on with us later. He's the head pro over there. He's going to give us some driving tips. So that's number one. Number two, if it was, as it was my desire to sit in the house for, not all day, beautiful day, Saturday, beautiful day, Sunday, but maybe spend more time than you should on the couch watching the PGA Championship this weekend, may not be necessary because Brooks Koepka has a 7-stroke lead over Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott. And I am not going to make the same mistake I did last June. Let me refresh your memory. I sat here on a Saturday morning last June when Dustin Johnson had a 4-stroke lead at the U.S. Open, may have even increased it to 5 after 36 holes, and I said, everyone, don't bother watching. Do whatever it is that you want to do on this Father's Day weekend. You know, take the boat out, go play golf, do some yard work, just throw the ball in the yard with the kids. You don't have to watch anything because DJ is going to win the U.S. Open. How wrong I was. And ironically, the man who ruined it all is the man who stands in position right now after a record-setting first round, setting the course record at Bethpage Black with an opening round 63, backing it up with the lowest score total after 36 holes for the PGA. I mean, Brooks Koepka is setting the pace right now. This isn't a 4 or 5-stroke lead over the field. This is 7 strokes after 36 holes. Now, like I said, I'm not going to make the same mistake I made with Dustin Johnson last year at the U.S. Open and say it's over, don't bother watching, blah, blah, blah. Of course not. I'm an idiot, but I'm not stupid, and I'm not going to make that mistake again. However, if you just want to check in on the tournament from time to time, we can feel safe knowing that at least for a while, there probably won't be much to watch in terms of drama. Which isn't to say there isn't anything to watch, because so far, Brooks Koepka has been put in on a clinic. I just don't find him all that interesting to watch in much the same way I didn't find Jordan Spieth all that interesting when he was tearing it up from tournament to tournament, or Justin Thomas, because, you know, perfection or close to it is not all that compelling. The guy hits the ball a long way. He keeps it in the fairway for the most part. He makes a lot of putts. Of course, it's a highest level of golf being played this weekend, but it isn't all that interesting. And I don't need, like, swashbuckling par saves in order to keep my interest. But at least a couple of guys playing at that level, he's the only one. He's got a 7-stroke lead on the field right now. Now, this is where it gets scary. Brooks Koepka, number one, does not seem all that unnerved by all this. As a matter of fact, he said before the tournament, he has said since then, that major championships are actually easier to win. They're easier to win than, quote-unquote, minor tournaments. And his thinking on this, I don't know if it's flawless. I don't know if you can't find a hiccup in here, but it is interesting when he notes that most of the guys in the field are going to be really, really nervous about being in a position to win a major championship. He said, I don't get nervous. So that eliminates a lot of the guys right there who are going to essentially undo themselves because of the nerves. He said, you know, there might be 35 guys that you have to beat. Well, if half of them are going to get nervous and make mistakes, like we see happen in every Saturday and Sunday of every major championship, he says, all it does is narrow down the field of the guys you got to beat, and all you have to do is beat the guys who are left. It's pretty sound thinking if, in fact, he is the type of guy who doesn't get nervous. I don't know if that's true. He can't get inside his head. He does seem to be a bit of an unfeeling monster out there. The guy is absolutely unflappable. And as good as he's been, this is an interesting discussion that we're going to have a little bit later in the show. But, I mean, we're talking about the back-to-back U.S. Open champion. We're talking about a guy who's already won 3 majors, right, with last year's PGA. And we're talking about a guy who seemingly should be undoubtedly and really inarguably the best player in the world. However, up until this tournament, do you know who's had the lower score, the lower total score for the last 3? Not last year's U.S. Open. As I said, Brooks Koepka was the winner at the U.S. Open back in 2018 and 2017. But the guy with the lowest score total for the previous 3 majors coming into this one, that would be the Masters, the PGA Championship, and the British Open. Just add those 3 scores together. It's not Brooks Koepka. It's Tiger Woods. So all this back and forth about Tiger and Brooks, people were annoyed with it before, and I get it, because Tiger hadn't won in so long, and it seemed unfair to the other players, and it seemed like really to be doing a disservice to the job of reporting what's happening at the golf tournament if all you're doing is talking about a guy who really isn't in a position to win it or hasn't won it, and as is the case this weekend, didn't make the cut. But don't fool yourself. Tiger had played better in the last 3 majors than any other golfer when you put them all together, which, of course, we don't do that. We don't. It's not a score aggregate. This is not, you know, soccer. We don't count goals amassed through a couple of matches. It's not strokes from the PGA and the British and the Masters. But had you done that, it would have been Tiger. So, and of course, because Tiger did win at the Masters this year, this became a very, very compelling storyline. The fact that these guys were in the same group on Thursday and Friday, and they had such different experiences at Bethpage Black. Someone asked me last night, I was doing Boston Sports Tonight on NBC Sports Boston, and someone said to me, well, you know, like, what happened to Tiger? I said, well, you know, Tiger is the type of guy who's going to say things oftentimes are going to make you scratch your head, and he's going to say things like he didn't have his best game. I don't know that he's going to get straight up into excuse making, and I'm not excuse making, but when asked to explain what happened to Tiger, my explanation would be, well, number one, there's a guy out there playing much, much better than him right now, and that's Brooks Koepka. That's number one. Number two, if you want like actual, okay, but in a, you know, what happened? Here's the guy who won the Masters. What happened? What happened? He's sick. He played a half a practice round Tuesday. He tapped out of his practice round entirely on Wednesday. And this isn't just for Tiger. Anybody, you're going to ignore, you're going to skip, you're going to completely abandon your practice round on the golf course where the tournament is taking place, especially for a major championship, especially for a course like Bethpage Black, which is, it's a monster. I mean, you've seen it all week long. My God, Jason Sobel had a funny tweet about it where he put up a photo of the sign that says, warning, the Bethpage Black golf course is for expert golfers only, blah, blah. How many times are we going to see that? How many times have we already seen it this week? How many times are we going to see it this weekend? We get it. It's a really, really hard public golf course. We get it. So for Tiger to abandon his practice round on Wednesday, he couldn't get out of bed. So he showed up on Thursday. My guess is he was still sick, and he didn't play very well on top of being sick. We'll get to Tiger's round, not shot by shot, but we'll kind of do the highlights and the lowlights here in a minute. But let's start with the man who is in the lead, and that would be Brooks Koepka. And we'll start with what he had to say after his second round, after he posted a 65 to go with his 63 on Thursday. This is Brooks Koepka yesterday after his 5-under par to get him to 12-under for the tournament.
Brooks, a lot of these fans this week obviously came out to watch Tiger Woods, but they might just accidentally have witnessed the passing of the torch. How do you feel about that narrative?
I mean, it's fun. It's always fun to get in Tiger's group. I enjoy the crowds. The crowds are definitely lively. I mean, it's New York. You know they're going to be loud, and you want them on your side, that's for sure. It's something I've enjoyed every time I played with them. I enjoy them cheering for him, the energy that they bring. It makes it exciting, and especially if you're going to play good, that's it's a good time to play good. Follow up.
But if the narrative is they witnessed the passing of the torch, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I've got 11 more to go. Or 12 more to go before that happens.
Whoops, 12 more. Don't forget, Tiger won the Masters. All right, so, again, the guy sounds pretty unflappable. And the way he started his PGA Championship on Thursday, he appeared unflappable. Again, in the same group with Tiger. They go out, they tee off, and they teed off on 10 on Thursday. And he opens up with a birdie on a very tough par four. Tiger makes double. Kind of set the tone for the day and for the first two rounds of the tournament. Brooks Koepka made birdies at 10, as I said, 14 and 18. Then they went over to hole one. As I said, they started on 10 on Thursday, made birdies at 1, 3, 5, and 9. No bogeys. That's a 63. It's a par 70. 7-under par sets the course record. How did he follow that up? By showing up and going off the first tee yesterday, he starts birdie, birdie, par, birdie. Well, tone has been set. Gauntlet has been thrown down. Line in the sand has been drawn. He did make two bogeys on the back yesterday and show the first hiccups, but they weren't, in my estimation, quote-unquote, bad bogeys. He bogeyed number 10, which is a tough, tough hole. He made a 5 there on that par 4. He made birdies at 13, 15, and 16 before he made his second bogey of the round, again on a par 3 on the 17th, which, and, you know, if a player at that level is going to make a bogey, and you had to guess where it's going to take place, it's either going to happen on a tough par 4 or a par 3. These guys hate bogeying par 5s more than you and I hate anything we can think of. So, and by the way, after he made that second bogey on the back 9 yesterday, he followed it up with a birdie on 18 to come in 33 on the back 9 and still posted a 65. And that's where we stand with Brooks Koepka, 12 under par through two rounds, 7 strokes better than Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott, who both posted fantastic rounds yesterday. Problem is, Brooks Koepka got out to a course record 63 on Thursday, and that's what's going to make him so difficult to catch, not just today, but for the entire weekend. He got two rounds, and that, I don't want to say that's all she wrote, but he's far and away taking this course by the reins and showing everyone else how it's done through two rounds. Jordan Spieth is, I would say, the closest in terms of guys who have put together back-to-back really solid rounds so far with a 69 and a 66. Dustin Johnson, pretty good, 69-67, but you've got to get out there and set the course record to get things going. We're gonna go a little bit with Tiger Woods, hear what he had to say. We're not going to necessarily go hole by hole for his round because it was a horror show of sorts, and we would be better suited to take a look at a couple of guys who, like I said, might have an outside chance. And then we'll take a look at the players who also missed the cut. There's a lot of big names who missed the cut at this tournament. Tiger is certainly not the only one. We still have to talk about John Daly and his PGA Championship. The man who was granted an exemption so that he could take a cart, smoke cigarettes, eat McDonald's. I'm not making this up. It all happened. We'll tell you what happened with him. And, of course, our lesson segment today from Stephen Daly, the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon. That's all coming up here this morning on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Back down the Sports Hub Golf Club on a glorious Saturday morning. Hopefully you're going to get a chance to get out and play today, which might be a great idea if you were thinking about maybe staying in and watching the PGA Championship. I don't know that you have to. I don't know that you have to with Brooks. I'm not going to say that he's absolutely going to run away with this thing. I made that mistake last year with Dustin Johnson and the U.S. Open. And that's when DJ had a lead that wasn't even half. I suppose it was. Brooks Koepka has a 7-stroke lead. I think DJ was up 4. Maybe 4 on the field. So, but I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it because there are some guys who are in position to at least make a move. And not necessarily by where they stand in relation to Brooks. I mean, Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott are both 7 strokes off the lead. But just by virtue of the way they've been playing, you know, for the most part, mistake-free. And I'll include Dustin Johnson in that mix and a couple other players. I can include the likes of Danny Lee. We'll get to him in a moment. My God, I legit feel bad for Danny Lee because he's a nice kid. He's a funny guy. He sat down, I think it was with, it may have been Ryan Johnston and I were at the Deutsche Bank a couple of years ago. It was before it was the Dell Technologies, if memory serves. And he was just a funny kid, and he told some funny stories about him first coming out onto the tour, and he said, you know, yeah, I got out there. I realized, oh, man, I really suck compared to these guys. And we think, ha, ha, ha. But he said, no, there are times when I can really suck. Danny Lee is maybe the best example of what Bethpage Black can do to a player because he went out in round one and posted a 64 in round one. I mean, that was an impressive score. It's really good. He made a couple of bogeys, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 birdies this kid made in the first round. Unbelievable. Round two, different story. Still a lot of birdies on the first 9 holes, 4 of them to be exact, but he had 2 bogeys to go with it. And then holes 10 through 18 yesterday, Danny Lee posted 2 bogeys and 2 doubles, and any other day on that golf course, completely understandable. But when you follow up a 64 with a 74 in round two, you essentially play yourself out of the tournament. He's 10 strokes off the lead, which is, like I said, it's a shame. He's a nice guy, and I think he's probably got a major championship in him at some point. And if I had to pick one, I would say it would be something like the PGA Championship, but it doesn't look like it's going to be this year. So back to Tiger Woods for a moment here. I want to listen to what he had to say post round yesterday. We'll just quickly take a look at his scorecard too. And again, this year it's not an exercise in futility. We're not just, you know, doing the fanboy Tiger thing. I mean, we're talking about the player who is the defending Masters champion and the guy who, you know, there was that one dope out in Wisconsin who went and bet $100,000 for him to win the Grand Slam this year. Haven't heard from that idiot. And I call him that because the guy's been in jail about five times and has multiple restraining orders against him from multiple women. He's a bad dude. So I will call him all kinds of names. And does it make me unhappy that he's $100,000 poorer today? But let's check in with Tiger and what he had to say post-round.
Well, I'm not playing the weekend, so that's disappointing, and just didn't quite have it. Thought resting would be better, so I'd have energy to play, and you know, unfortunately, I just didn't. I made too many mistakes, you know, and just didn't do the little things I need to do. You know, I had a couple three putts, I didn't hit wedges close, didn't hit any fairways today, you know. Did a lot of little things wrong. I there's no reason why I can't get up to speed again and crank it back up. And I got to start feeling a little bit better first before that happens. And you know, we'll do that first and then start cranking it back up again.
All right. So you could point to a couple of things. I mentioned the illness that Tiger was dealing with. The fact that he didn't play a competitive round in between the Masters and Thursday, I think that hurt him. I think he started dialing in and focusing in. And this is something that players are going to have to contend with moving forward now with this new PGA calendar. Moving the PGA Championship from August to May. And I was just operating under the assumption that everybody knew about this. You know, everybody was on board with what they were doing and why they were doing it. And then I heard from a couple of people this week who were kind of shocked to find out that the PGA Championship, the second major of the year, or what I should say is the fourth major of the year, is now the second major of the year. And why is this happening? And what's going on? And, you know, who's what's going on? Well, this was put into place a couple of years ago. This is the first year it's been implemented. But a couple of years ago, the PGA Tour decided to do this because they don't want to compete with football anymore. They're done with it. So they shifted the entire schedule. The FedEx Cup, no longer four events, it's three events. That also means that the Deutsche Bank, which became the Dell Technologies Championship, not an every year event anymore. It's going to be an every other year event. It's going to be shared with another tournament so that they can go back and forth, make that three tournaments instead of four, and have it wrap up by Memorial Day, as opposed to trying to play a Labor Day weekend tournament when college football is starting. The NFL is starting the following weekend. The PGA realized that if you can't beat them, don't join them. Just don't try. And they weren't beating the NFL in terms of interest and ratings and anything else. Hell, they're not even really beating college football. Every player that would come off the course at the Deutsche Bank and then the Dell Technologies Championship, every player that we would talk to when they were coming off, I would say 80% of them would be more interested in talking about what their college football team was doing or going to do that year as opposed to what had just happened on the golf course. Everybody's mind turns to football in September. So the PGA Tour is doing that, and they're going to have the PGA Championship now. Fill that big chasm that used to exist between the Masters and the U.S. Open. But players have never done this before. So for Tiger Woods, who won the Masters, had plans to play in a tournament or two in between that major and this major, well, he readjusted his thinking when he said, hey, I'm a guy who can win major championships again. Now I got to think about this differently. And that probably hurt him. It probably hurt him just from the notion that he's thinking differently about this than he would any other tournament. He's been playing well, but that coupled with the remarkable play of Brooks Koepka not having his best game forced him out of contention for the weekend. Like, I don't even know if I want to go round through Tiger's scorecard. I don't even know it's worth it. He missed the cut by one. the cut for this tournament was plus four. Tiger Woods shot 72 and then 73. Things went poorly for him right out of the gate. First hole on Thursday. He was playing with Brooks and Francesco Molinari. He double bogeyed the first hole. He made a six on the par four 10th. Excuse me. He He ended up making one birdie on that opening nine, but then poured in another double bogey two holes later. Couple of birdies on his second nine, and one eagle, a fantastic eagle that got him back within 3-4 strokes of the lead at that time, which was held by Brooks Koepka. But then bogeys on 5, 7, and 8, which were his 14th, 16th, and 17th holes of the day, that pretty much undid him. His second round was not that up and down. And they went off at number one. He made a bogey at 2. Couple of birdies on the front, but 4 bogeys on the back and only one birdie on the 13th hole. And he carded to 73, and he's home for the weekend. As he said, we just heard that from Tiger. Some of the other players to miss the cut, and like I said, he is far from the only top name to miss the cut. John Rahm opened up with an even par 70, but then shot 75 in the second round, so he go bye-bye. Kyle Stanley, a lot of people probably ended up with him, and if you went deep enough in your pool when you were picking players. Same goes for Martin Keimer. These guys all missed the cut by one stroke, just like Tiger. Bubba Watson. Not necessarily a terrible tournament. He had a terrible first round. He was 6 over par, but he shot a 69 in his second round. But still, that was too much for him, too much ground for him to make up. On that golf course especially. So he's home for the weekend. Sergio Garcia, he also missed the cut by a stroke. Kevin Na, Steve Stricker, Bryson DeChambeau. Here's a guy that people are looking at and saying, hey, Bryson, the mad scientist, the man with the single-length irons and the crazy swing plane. What's going on with Bryson? 72-74, that's what's going on with Bryson. 2 over par, 4 over par. He missed the cut by 2 strokes. He's done for the weekend. Patrick Reed, same position. Brandon Grace, Ian Poulter, good players, top players, all done. Won't be teeing it up this weekend in the PGA Championship. Jason Duffner, another major championship winner. We'll get to John Daly, who remarkably only shot 75-76. The fact that he was there in the first place still rubs a lot of people the wrong way, me included. And I'm a John Daly fan. I like watching him play. I've liked watching him play from way back in the day when he broke through with the British Open and this tournament, and, you know, winning the PGA Championship, and then, you know, proving he wasn't a one-trick pony with his win at the British. I mean, he's just a great story. He's a fun guy, but the fact that he's out there in a cart, well, more on that a little bit later. But those are some of the players who have missed the cut and will not be playing this weekend. One other thing to mention is a lot of people feel that, you know, within 10 strokes of the lead, that's your real field for Saturday and Sunday at a major championship. Who are the guys who really have a chance of winning this thing? It's guys within 10 shots of the lead. There's even been voices who have been raised up. It's like, you know, the cut really should be within 10 strokes of the lead. And some tournaments operate that way. This would be ridiculous. If you went guys who were within 10 strokes of the lead, you would have a grand total of 18 players playing this weekend at the PGA Championship. Brooks Koepka, 12 under par. The next closest players are Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott. They are 7 strokes back. There's a handful of guys at 4 under, including Dustin Johnson and Kelly Kraft, Daniel Berger. Daniel Berger had a nice second round, 66. But then one guy at 3 under, Justin Rose, and then a big group at 2 under, including another one of my favorite players on the tour right now, Harold Varner III, who I believe next to Tiger is the only African-American player on the tour right now. He went on an absolute tear on the second nine on Friday. He finished birdie, 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 birdie on holes 15 through 18. Unbelievable. Put up a blistering 67 because he had made a bogey on the 10th hole, which a lot of people are having trouble on number 10, as always. So that followed up his 71. Harold Varner III, one of those one of those players, a huge pack of players within 10 strokes of the lead, but there aren't that many. So if you're looking at the improbable of somebody catching Brooks Koepka over the weekend, if you want to expand it out to players who were then 10 strokes of the lead and maybe think that somebody could make a tournament out of this, there's only 18 guys. So the chances are fewer than you might even think. Ricky Fowler, by the way, another player who is at 200 par within two strokes, back-to-back 69s. Okay, I want to get to John Daly, which we will do. But first, Stephen Daly, who is the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon. He was kind enough to sit down and give us some tips on driving the golf ball. Like I said, you know, nothing crazy today. We're not going to talk about putting alignment. We're not going to talk about grip pressure on your chipping stroke. Just teeing it up, tee it high, let it fly. Driving the golf ball. Tips from Stephen Daly. That's coming up next.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
It's time for our tip of the week here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. And for that, we go with Stephen Daly, who is the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon. Stephen, we're going to be talking about my favorite subject today, and that is driving the golf ball. Because is there anything more fun than stepping onto the tee, driver in hand, and having a good feeling about how you're going to hit the ball?
Nothing. It's the most important thing. You know, it gets you started on the hole, and, you know, nothing better than just getting up and hitting it as far as you can.
It does. It does wonders for your whole attitude toward the hole. Now, I mean, we've all fell victim to the great drive followed up with laying the sod over an 8-iron when you've only left yourself, well, for me, like 140 in. But, you know, for everyone else who just wants to get the ball in play and hit a decent drive, what do you have for us tip-wise in terms of just hitting good, consistent, and hopefully long tee shots with the driver?
You know, you said it there with the consistency. You know, being consistent is going to be the most important thing. So centerness of contact is going to be important. So as rudimentary as it sounds, the tee height that you put the ball on the peg is going to be very important, as well as maybe a little bit wider stance with a big swing. It's going to be easier to be off balance if you have a narrow stance. So I'd widen that stance a little bit. And then, you know, some of the results from Dr. Brody's science is that hitting the ball as far as you can is the most important thing. So I'd say just swing away.
I'm glad you brought that up because all the, you know, in this age of metrics and everything else, the whole drive for show, putt for dough, actually driving the ball a long way, even if you don't keep it in the fairway, statistically shows the closer you get to the hole with that first shot, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, you look at Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, you know, Ricky Fowler, all the best players in the world. They're not too interested with hitting the fairway as much as they are with how far that ball's going. So I would just, you know, swing away. Obviously, there is some parameters as to how far off the fairway you want to be, but hitting it as far as you can is going to be the most important thing.
I would think that has a lot to do with the fact that if you've got the strength to hit the ball a long way and you've got the mechanics to do that, you probably can utilize those same mechanics to muscle the ball out of the rough if you don't find the short grass with the tee shot.
Certainly. Yeah, exactly. You know, a wedge from 120 yards in the rough is going to be a better shot than, you know, a 5-iron from 180 in the fairway. So at least for my game anyways.
Or even for not taking it to that extreme, 120 out and you got a wedge in your hand as opposed to 140 out. And now you've, you know, moved maybe to an 8-iron. You're bringing in the extra distance and you're bringing in an extra, you know, a little bit more length on the club. And for most people, they're going to be more comfortable, you know, standing there with that wedge as opposed to anything longer and increasing the number of ways it can go wrong with the further out you go.
Absolutely. You know, science shows the flatter the face, the more off-center hits you're going to have and the more offline those shots will go. So the more that you can get a club with more loft, the better off you're going to be.
So in this also, Stephen Daly here, by the way, head professional here at the Cape Club in Sharon, with the oversized drivers now, and they've kind of maxed out on size and club face and all that, but is it still as important to find the center of the club face, not just for the height of the ball, for where it's launching off of, but actually getting as close to that sweet spot? We've been told that, like, the sweet spot has gotten bigger. Is that true? Or do you need to, should we all still be trying to find that exact center of the club face with our drivers?
Hey, listen, I'm still trying to find the center of the club face, but, you know, centerness of contact is where the majority of that distance is coming from. Also with the speed of the swing. But, you know, obviously more off-center hits are going to be bad for your game. So the money, as many times you can hit the center of the club, the better. But, you know, I wouldn't leave the driver in the bag either.
Okay, so widening up the stance would be the number one thing. Is that to promote the best trajectory to hit up on that ball, like we're told we're supposed to with the driver? Does that also help with finding the center of the club face? What does widening the stance do for us?
Yeah, both of those things, but also better balance throughout the swing. So you talked about the consistency. Being able to strike the ball consistently is going to be dependent on the balance of the swing too. So a little bit wider base is going to allow you to, you know, keep that balance and deliver the club the way you should.
Sounds like widening the stance. I mean, we could boil it down to that. So how wide? Shoulder width, a little beyond shoulder width?
Me personally, I like to go a little bit wider than the shoulders.
Me too, but I have very narrow shoulders.
But, you know, enough to where it doesn't restrict the movement of your hips and the rest of your body. So certainly there are times where you can go too wide, but, you know, maybe just outside the shoulders would be my preference.
Okay, widen that stance. It's going to help you with consistency in terms of finding the center of the club face, the correct angle to hit that ball, hit it a long way. And as Stephen Daly, the head professional here at the Cape Club in Sharon, says, long is good. Even if it's in the rough, it's going to increase your chances for making a good score on that hole.
That's it.
All right, Stephen, I appreciate the time here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can't believe it. I think it's the second week in a row we got to do this. All right. A little housekeeping here. Tim McCone, hello.
Tim. Hardy, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Let's try this again. Love you, buddy. I mean, you know, it's just once again, issues with the name of the show. Okay? So this hour of what? What did you say? This hour of the golf club with Hardy?
I'm looking at the schedule right now. I looked it up on the schedule. It says the golf club with Hardy. I wanted to be very exact with it this week. And that's not it?
No. No, it is not. I mean, at this point, I don't want to give you the fish because I don't want you to eat for the day. I want to teach you to fish so that you may eat for a lifetime. So I don't know how else to do this, you know, live on the air other than to just tell you and then fingers crossed for next weekend, you know?
I'm going to effort this. I'm going to have everything locked down for next weekend. I promise you that. Yeah.
It is the Sports Hub Golf Club. The show is bigger than any one man. And I appreciate you trying to attach my name to it. I'm the only one who's ever hosted it. It's 7 years now of the Sports Hub Golf Club, but it's always been the Sports Hub Golf Club. It is the Sports Hub Golf Club.
I mean, the big booming voice guy says it at the beginning of every segment, right? It's the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Oh my, if I didn't know any better, Tim, I think it was just, you know, the slightest of signs of disrespect. Really?
Just a slight troll. No, it's just not. It's not.
Yeah. Kind of, right? Right? Just a tiny little bit. I'm glad Ryan Johnston is there, because if there's anybody who can appreciate a guy rolling around the PGA Championship in a golf cart, it's John Daly. And I think we talked about this a little bit last weekend, Ryan. The fact that John Daly was given the exemption, he was allowed to use a cart for the first 2 days at the PGA, he did not make the cut. Spoiler alert, John Daly did not make the cut at Bethpage Black.
Damn, had all my money on him.
He got permission from the PGA's Americans with Disabilities Act Committee to use a cart. He shot a 6 over 76 yesterday, and that put him well out of contention. 11 over par. So not only did he miss the cut by 6 strokes, he is now 23 strokes off the lead. So he will not be playing. He will not be going for his second PGA championship. I mean, let's not forget, John Daly's not the one-trick pony. He won the PGA, broke through there, you know, made it as the 9th alternate and shocked the world. And then I think shocked everyone even more when he won the British, because they thought, well, here's going to be, you know, the greatest of guys to win one major and then never heard from again. No, and continued to hear from him, and the crowds love him. He is the everyman. He is the everyman.
Well, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, not only is he riding around in a golf cart at a major championship, but the addition of the large McDonald's Diet Coke cup in the cup holder really kind of completed the whole look, I thought.
I'm pretty sure I saw a bag of McDonald's food.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
In that, you know, that little, it's not a dashboard, but anyone who's been in a golf cart, you've got that little cubby, that little underneath storage area. It's like an open glove box on both sides. So there's that, and there is the fact that he averaged about, according to one reporter who he walked the entire round, Daly Road, but he walked the entire round. He said Daly averaged about a cigarette per hole. So he's ripping darts and he's drinking Diet Coke.
Almost the whole pack in a round. That's pretty good.
It's too bad he missed the cut. He's not going to finish in the money because that's like 10, 11 bucks. I don't know what smokes cost in New York. I was behind somebody yesterday.
Oh, in New York, it's like 14 bucks a pack, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I saw somebody, you know, spend like $11 on a pack of Marlboro Lights yesterday. I'm like, holy crap, cigarettes are expensive now. But, you know, this is not all that different from the John Daly that I saw years ago. This was in Las Vegas, and I was watching a golf tournament. It's probably 20 years ago now. It's literally 1999. And this is, you know, what one of my quote-unquote, you know, brushes with fame on a golf course where John Daly had made it home in two on a par five. Everybody else has taken three shots to get there. Daly gets home with a five iron on his second shot. And this is Las Vegas. It is warm. You know, people are out there, they're loose, they're having a good time. He is probably, you know, he had probably rolled up to the golf course that day after being up all night playing the $500 slot machines. Loves himself the slot machines. High limit slots. So he is out there wearing like a rain jacket, even though it's like 92 degrees. Because he's got the shakes.
He's trying to sweat it out.
Yeah, he's probably got the DTs. And he's got a huge, you know, shareable bag of peanut M&Ms. He ain't sharing. He's just, you know, sucking those things down, and he's walking up, and everyone's going nuts because he made it home in two, and now he's got an eagle putt. And I'm sitting, like, greenside up on this little mound, and the other guys in his group, they putt out, and he had hit it close enough to where he didn't even get to take his first putt until everybody else had putted out. So he's looking at this eagle putt. He's looking at this eagle putt. And he walks around the thing. And in one motion, he takes the Marlboro Red out of his mouth. He flicks it off to the side, walks up, and in one motion, strokes that putt in for an eagle. And the crowd goes nuts. Ah, ah, ah. And he's walking, and I see he's walking, like, toward me, like, up the hill to get to the next hole. And he's shaking, and he's got the Diet Coke in his hand again, and he's reaching for another cigarette. And everyone's like, great eagle, John. Nice putt, John. And I knew. Ryan, listen to me. I knew. It wasn't the putt. He would have rather been holding a live rattlesnake than a putter in his hand for that eagle putt. I knew it was the shot that got him there. I knew it was the five iron that he stuck to 6 feet that he was really happy with. So as he walked past me, you know what I said to him? Two words. I said, shot, John. And he looked at me for a second through those bloodshot eyes with his hands trembling. He just nodded. He said, thanks, man. We had a moment. You understand? I recognized it was the shot that got him there, not the eagle putt that he was happy with, that he wanted acknowledgement for, and I gave it to him.
You know, hearing you tell that story, though, makes me respect Michael Jordan that much more. Because think about Michael Jordan's career. Because we're talking about John Daly in Vegas and what that, you know, what that did to a man. Michael Jordan, very famously during the Eastern Conference Finals when they were in New York, went to Atlantic City and did like an all-nighter right the night before an Eastern Conference final game. From what you hear the stories, it was kind of on the regular. Like, Michael was not exactly shy about visiting the nightlife and things like that the night before a game. And one of the great players of all time, one of the great clutch performers of all time, you know he was just tired and hungover like half the time when they were playing in the playoffs because he was doing things like that.
Yeah, and it didn't affect him. You know? Daly, it affected him.
Yeah.
And now he gets the disability exemption to ride around in a car because, oh, he's got the bad knee, he's diabetic. I'm like, Hey, John, you know, nothing for nothing, but it may be a slight bit of doing a disservice to people with actual disabilities, because all you have to do is stop smoking and lose 30 pounds. I you know, do wonders for your knees. I'm no doctor. I don't know for sure.
What's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to not eat McDonald's while he's playing a professional golf major? I mean, come on.
Maybe not rip through a pack of Marlboro Reds during the round. Would that help? Would that contribute to your overall health and well-being? Again, not a medical doctor, so I'm not sure, but I think so. And I think it. And people still loved him. They loved seeing him there. There were people, like, you know, hopping onto his cart. There was one kid who hopped onto his cart and got a picture sitting in his cart while Daly was up on the green.
Of course,
because
he's everybody's Uncle Jethro now. Like, he's just. He's the, you know, if he was with you, you'd be embarrassed, but he's not. So now he's a spectacle.
Do you know how he suffered his most recent knee injury? This is, or the one from like 2 years ago. Do you know this?
Fell out of a Hooters?
No, he got hit by a car in a Hooters parking lot. He was at Augusta, where he doesn't play in the Masters, but he shows up. This was 2 years ago, I think.
I would imagine it's quite the spectacle.
He shows up at Augusta in his motorhome. He doesn't fly. He takes the motorhome everywhere, and he parked it in the Hooters parking lot, and he sets up his merch table, and he was sitting there signing stuff at the Hooters, you know, 4 miles away from Augusta National. Somebody comes tearing through the parking lot, and he had to leap out of the way, and I think it was a folding table that hit him, and that's how he hurt his knee. You can't make this stuff up. You got hit by a car in a Hooters parking lot.
I mean, is there a more appropriate, like, mesh of athlete and corporation than John Daly and Hooters being put together?
You could
not ask for a better spokesman for Hooters than John Daly.
He's the guy. He is the face of the franchise. Ryan, you got a big, big hockey show coming up later today. I mean, Stanley Cup final, baby. I'm shocked. I don't know what they're talking about in Carolina, but there's not much hockey to talk about because not much hockey was played by that team. That was unbelievable.
Just dominance, just total dominance. And now today will be, Hardy, the first of our two-part Stanley Cup final preview on the hockey show, since there won't be another game until Memorial Day. So you're not gonna be sick about
talking about game one of the
Stanley Cup final. So we've got, you know, full 2 hours this Saturday and a full 2 hours next Saturday, where by then we will finally know who the opponent is. But we've got a lot of hockey show to do before the next Bruins outing.
Awesome. All right. Well, look forward to listening to it. Thank you, Tim McCone and Brian Robb back there at the station. And you enjoy yourselves here this morning, gentlemen. And we will do it again next week. Thanks again to Stephen Daly, by the way, the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon, for giving us the lesson segment. You can look forward to more of those throughout the season right here. Tim McCone with the Hub headlines. Ryan Johnston coming up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.